Welcome to the MJA podcast. Today I'm chatting with Professor Geoffrey Isbister, who is a clinical toxicologist at the University of Newcastle and also a senior staff specialist at Calvary Mater. Hello, Geoffrey. Thank you for your time.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Haven't been bitten by a snake, so that's all good.
Yeah, that's always good.
Well, yes. But apparently not all that many do, considering where we live.
Yeah, that's right. Despite the fear of British tourists, etc., and Australia having the most deadly creatures in the world, we really see very few snake bites, or I should say snake envenomies. People are bitten by snakes where they have the effect of the venom.
Right.
There's probably thousands of suspected snake bites, but sometimes it's very difficult to tell the difference between a stick bite and a true snake bite. And that's because, for example, a brown snake has such small fangs that people mightn't even notice they've been bitten by the snake and have severe effects, where someone might get jabbed by a stick and have no effects at all. It's very difficult to estimate, what that number is in terms of people who are just bitten by snakes and don't get an effect. We have, and what our research has been showing, is that there is actually not as many as we thought who really do get the envenoming from snakes, and probably, only about 100 to 150 a year, and, at most maybe 200 or 300.
So the research you're talking about is the Australian Snake Bite Project, or ASP, which has to be the best acronym ever.
I can't take credit for that. That's from a Tamworth emergency physician thought that up.
Give us a little overview of the project, what it involved, what your methods were, and what you were hoping to find out.
So the Australian Snake Bite Project has been started probably in 2002, 2003. It's sort of built out of some work that Professor Bart Curry originally did in Darwin, where he just prospectively collected snake bites. And that was just through Royal Darwin Hospital. I trained there and put some of my time, and then we decided to do it Australia-wide, and we built it up over a few years, and then by about 2005, we had enough resources that we could collect most Australian snake bite cases. So we collected through calls to all of the major poison centres. We did all calls or cases that are referred to clinical toxicologists in Australia. Then we have, in particular, major hospitals or hospitals that see a lot of snake bite. There's usually someone who's interested that'll give us a call about cases. And we have specific ethics approval in a number of of the states, having statewide ethic approval. The aim of the study has always been to identify cases. We don't require much work at the sites. Once we identify a case, we, the investigators, initially just me, would ring the hospital. We would fax all the information for the study, so the patient could send data sheets, and then we have an e-fax system where it could be then faxed back to us so that we've got a record of it all. And we then enter that all into a relational database, and then that's all checked and reviewed again as it's done. So we've done that from 2005. We're still doing it now. This study is for the first 10 years of it. We think we probably capture about, I used to say 50%. I think it's much closer to 80%. There's very few times where we hear of cases that are not in the Australian Snake Bite Project. We are aware of cases where some hospitals or some patients don't want to consent, but we still know of that case, so we still have it as a number, even though we have no other information.
Let's have a look at your major findings. The one that struck me, first of all, was the effectiveness or lack of effectiveness of snake venom detector kits. Talk to me a little bit about those results and what that means for treatment.
In Australia, we've had this supposedly a bedside detection kit that can detect the five major terrestrial snakes. So that's all groups of snakes. So that's brown snakes, black snakes, tiger snakes, taipans, and death adder.
Yep.
And within some of those, there's other snakes. So tiger snake includes rough-scaled snake and a few other groups. And the point of them is not to say it's that snake that's bitten you, or it's more designed to decide which antivenom to use. Now, that kit was based on getting snake venom off the bite site.
Yes.
So the idea was that the snakes are quite messy when they bite, venom, saliva, and it's like they put a whole lot on their skin as well as injecting it. And then by rubbing that off with a swab, and this is put in the kit, and it would tell you which one it was and then which antivenom that you would give. Now, there's always been a big problem with this that, you know, the manufacturers and everyone has known and has always been advised not to do, but we showed in the study people still do it. So it's only useful if you know the patient is envenomed, right, and you are going to give them antivenom. So the question it answers is, I've got an envenomed patient, which antivenom should I give? Now, we showed in this study, and I've got the numbers in front of me, for a non-envenomed patients had the test done, like a considerable number, 50% of the ones, who should have never, ever got the test done in the first place.
So what you're getting is false positives,
Yeah, they're false positives, but they're not even false positives. The tests should never have been done. You know, the criticism of our study will always be, well, they didn't follow the instructions. You can't blame the kit. The problem is those instructions have been there for 20, 30 years, and we always telling doctors and healthcare staff, this is what you must do. But despite that, they're still doing it half the time. Yeah. And as soon as that happens, it pushes people that, we detected venom, and they don't think this patient may still not have been bitten by a snake at all. And then in some of those cases, this even made, you know, those patients, they were given antivenom simply because they had a positive test that should have never been done in the first place.
And getting an antivenom is not a small thing. I mean, they can have nasty side effects.
Yeah, that's exactly right. With any of the Australian antivenom, you have some of the best in the world.
Yep.
Probably about a fifth, 50% to a quarter of patients will have a reaction, and that's a rash, itchiness, feeling quite unpleasant. About somewhere between 2 and 5% will have a severe reaction and get hypotension, so a drop in blood pressure, and potentially that's life-threatening. So, you know, up to 1 in 20 patients are going to get a severe adverse effect, which means, you know, that's, you know, not a simple thing to be giving a patient who doesn't require a treatment at all. The second problem, which is more new, even when you do these venom detection kits in patients that are envenomed, it's still giving the wrong result. Yeah. Can't really call it a false positive because it's the wrong snake or it's inconclusive. And we've shown that this had been published particularly in the past for tiger snake, where it was positive for brown snake instead of tiger snake. There's certainly cases where tiger snake, patients with tiger snake bites and envenoming have been given brown snake antivenom because the kit was wrong.
So presumably that's less effective? Or...
Well, that's what you would assume. Luckily, Australian commercial antivenom in Australia are actually all polyvalent. So we have this idea, we have this polyvalent antivenom we give when we don't know which snake it is. And then we have all these other monovalent ones that are designed to be given for each of those five different groups. At some point in time, the company realised, and it's economic, it makes a lot of sense, is that if you've only got a limited number of horses, so to get an antivenom, you immunise your horses with the venom of the whichever snake it is. Then you bleed the horses and you produce the antivenom from that. Much cheaper is to give one lot of horses, give them all five types of venoms, and then take the blood and produce a polyvalent from that. And that's what they do. The only difference between the monovalent ones is that the volume that is in there is sufficient to treat the particular snake group. That's where for brown snake, you actually only need a very small amount to treat one brown snake bite because they deliver much less venom compared to a death adder or black snakes who deliver much larger amounts of venom. So you need more of the antivenom. So when, and tigers are sort of down near brown, so that if you give a tiger snake a brown, you're almost giving them the same thing, probably just a little bit less, not different. And that's why it doesn't matter.
Yep.
That then is the third reason that using this kit makes no sense, because it's much safer to go, let's just give polyvalent. So 90% of snake bites and snake venom in Australia are either brown or tiger. The rare and uncommon ones are taipan, death adder, and black snake. So if 90% of your snakes are brown or tiger, the safest decision is just to give them one vial of brown, one vial of tiger, and then not even do the test. Then there's no confusion and they're treated. And certainly over the last 3 or 4 years, that practice has become far more common. What we would like is the company to go, why don't we just make what we would call a low volume polyvalent that contains enough to treat one tiger and one brown, and then we would just use that. Interestingly, the vets have had this for decades. a product, which is Tiger Brown, that they, because they can never work out what's fake.
Yeah.
Dogs. It's certainly possible. The reason they don't do it is all about the expense of re-registering a product, Therapeutic Goods Administration.
And expense is not a minor factor here, is it? I mean, antivenom is expensive.
Yeah, antivenom is very expensive.
What did you find out about the use of pressure bandages? Because that's number one on most first aid kit kind of lists of what to do with a snake bite, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And we haven't, despite people wanting more and more from the study, that this study doesn't say a lot about it. Essentially, it says that 90% of patients got bandages, and whether it prevented various different effects was not very conclusive, didn't really make and not much sense. The pressure bandage has never really been shown in any sort of study in humans to be effective. The reason that it works is it was proved in restrained monkeys in the late 70s that if you put it on restrained monkeys, it worked very effectively. The problem is that as soon as you move after a bite, it's the movement of your muscles is
pumps the stuff out.
It basically pumps it around. The snake venom comes through our lymphatics, and muscles are something that make the lymphatics pump and move around. So you can put on the best bandage, but if you walk, even if the bite's on the arm, it's a waste of time. And, some studies have shown that, not with venom, but with markers that are similar to venom, that's what happened. However, I've not been the last person to say that we should be using. The thing about first aid is, and we know this for snake bite worldwide, is that when someone gets bitten by a snake, everyone wants to do something, And if what's done is safe, then that's probably the most important thing that can ever happen. So, overseas, they cut it, they suck it, they electrocute it, they put black stones on it, they do anything you can imagine.
Yeah.
In Australia, we just put a bandage on. If it doesn't work, it has done no harm. And so, although to medical circles, I would say, I don't really think it does that much. We don't have the evidence to show that it does that much. I still think it's a really important thing that we continue to do it. And if it does work, great. But in terms of first aid, what we did show, so the first aid that I believe that is so important is actually basic life support.
CPR if you need it, etc.
CPR, so that would prevent the deaths in our study.
What did you find out about the dosage of antivenom given over that 10-year period?
In this study, we have simply reported the change in dose. Mm-hmm. Prior to the study, we've done a number of studies looking at dose that showed that we needed to use much lower doses than had been used for the last 10, 20 years, where they'd been sort of escalated for various different reasons. So that research is published. And from that, we've gone back out and said, look, you really only need to be giving one vial in treatment. So this study, now we can look at 10 years, clearly shows that over that time period, we've gone from a median dose of 4 or 5 vials right down to 1. And that's mainly in changes to the use of brown snake and tiger snake antivenom.
So clearly it's effective after 1 vial, and anything else is just a waste of antivenom, really.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So we're not making it any better. It works just as well. We are potentially making it safer by giving less antivenom. But most importantly, we're reducing the cost. And the cost is just not in the treatment of a patient. So if you give one vial of brown snake, which is a couple of $100, mm-hmm. rather than 10 vials of brown snake, a couple of $1,000, that isn't a big saving. But if you look at New South Wales, that has over 150 hospitals, most of those in the country, most being required to keep the initial dose for a snake bite, if you reduce the dose from 5 to 1, then you're actually doing that 150 times across the state.
Yeah.
Because of they only last 2 or 3 years. Antivenom in all those small hospitals, it's just being thrown out every 2 or 3 years. So the savings in the stocking, in fact, not in, there's 100 snake bites a year. So at that level, we save money, but really we save the money across Australia when, I'm not sure, but there's somewhere between 700 and 800, I think, public hospitals in Australia.
That sounds like a big saving and a sensible saving. What were the other major results that you found?
So the other thing we looked at was the deaths. So in the study, so I've talked about the Australian Snake Bite Project, where we collect all these cases from hospitals. We then also went and questioned the National Coronial database where all deaths, all coronial deaths have been reported, and look for all the cases where snake bite is mentioned as a cause of death. And that showed two things. One, that we already got most of the deaths through the study, and certainly more because many of those deaths were in hospital and didn't actually get reported.
Right.
And picked up a few more. So we're pretty sure we got most deaths in that 10-year period, and there was 23 deaths. So that's, on average, 2 to 3 a year. It ranges from about 1 up to 6. That doesn't, from previous publications, that doesn't seem to have changed for, decades. And most of those deaths are from brown snakes, and most of them are deaths out of hospital deaths. Although the patient does get to hospital, they have a cardiac arrest, and if nothing's done about that, they then get into hospital but then die. All you want is just CPR.
Yep.
You just want to keep pumping the blood around. What happens is that the patients drop their blood pressure, and in most cases, so that happens in over a third of brown snake bites, and most of those then just spontaneously recover. They collapse, pass out, and then spontaneously recover, and we can reproduce this in animals. But in some, prolonged or severe enough that then goes on to cause more problems, brain injury, etc. Patient just gets CPR for 5 or 10 minutes at that time. That's what's life-saving.
Okay.
And so we then looked at our survivors in the Australian Snake Bite Project who did have that early collapse, and we showed a big difference between those two. In those patients in the death, median time to CPR was 15 minutes, whereas in the survivors, median time to CPR was 1 minute and a much tighter range. So it was essentially collapsed under a parent who did CPR, and we had a couple of those. The child survived, and then we had the very sad cases of someone bit by a snake lying somewhere for 20 minutes while people called an ambulance and did nothing.
The moral of the story being, don't go out in Australia alone.
Oh, no, that's right. My first aid message to everyone is, probably that's the first aid message, is CPR, people doing CPR and doing it when they see patients like that, we would improve snake bite. But at the same time, we improve a whole lot of other things that are far more. And the second first aid thing is a mobile phone. And then the third is mobilisation and a pressure bandage.
The only other thing that we've looked that and
the way forward is how early antivenom is given. This study, just being an epidemiological study, we didn't so much look at the outcome, was antivenom more effective. We really looked at, over time, have we been able to give antivenom more rapidly to patients. So in some separate studies, we have shown for black snake and for taipan that the earlier patients got antivenom, so we're talking within 3 hours, they did better than patients who got more delayed antivenom. What this study showed is that we're not doing 10 years ago and now we're doing exactly the same. And this is something that needs to be improved and is certainly focus of our research. And a lot of that delay, the patient comes into hospital, we assess them, we send off a whole lot of blood, that all takes about 2 hours, but people make decisions. And there's a delay of 2 or 3 hours there. And that's actually, a potentially a significant delay. So, yes, this paper's then, that's our step forward.
If you could wave your magic wand and change one thing about the way snake bite is treated, what would you do?
What I would do is have a bedside test that could tell us whether the patient is envenomed as they arrive in the hospital. At the moment, all we've got is they might be vomiting or feeling unwell, and you go, am I going to give them antivenom to, and I'm not sure. And certainly it's something we're looking at, a blood test now that can just detect the presence of venom in blood. It just says this patient is envenomed, and so we give antivenom. So if we can do that at the bedside, like within under 30 minutes, that test would be the magic thing we could have, that we could then treat patients.
And how realistic is that, and how far away is it?
We have one test that certainly works well for most Australian snakes, actually very well for some international snakes. As an international problem, this is a much more important issue. Yeah, we do have an enzyme that we can test that potentially is in most snake venoms, that we can do the test in the laboratory. It's then about developing that so we can do it like as a dipstick, so that we can just dip it in, it's positive, and we give it. So it potentially could be done. The things that would make it difficult are that this is an uncommon condition, and the research for it may be quite expensive. But my argument would be, doing this worldwide would save hundreds of thousands of lives.
Thanks very much, Jeff, for your time. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you. It was enjoyable.